U.S. is a signatory, Barbara Hines, to the U.S. Convention Against Torture. These people, many of them are fleeing horrific violence in their own countries. Is it against the law for the U.S. to deport them?
I think the problem with this is that many of the women are either unrepresented or they have substandard immigration lawyers. And it's very difficult for in an adversarial system that we have, which many countries do not have, to present asylum and Convention Against Torture claims. But yes, we are a signatory not only to the Convention Against Torture, but to the Convention on the Status and Protection of Refugees. And I think that our government is not complying with those international norms.
Of course, we'll continue to follow this issue. Barbara Hines, longtime immigration lawyer, and Katie Shepard, managing attorney for Cata Pro Bono Project in Dilley, Texas. Thanks so much for joining us. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is hiring a director of finance and operations, as well as a director of development to lead our fundraising efforts. Visit democracynow.org for more information. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Sam Malkoff, Robbie Karen, Steve Martinez, Hani Massoud, Juan Carlos Davila, Pedro Rodriguez. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Today is Friday, January 8th, and the time is now 8 o'clock. Some announcements, and then we'll have Positively Revolting.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, and accessories with a focus on natural fibers since 1984. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com.
Tune in to the podcast Probable Cause This on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/probablecause. On this podcast, I look at the top stories on the lack of accountability for police and public officials in Oregon and across the country. That's kboo.fm/probablecause for a weekly roundup of stories on holding our public officials accountable to we the people.
To America is be true to what you said on paper.
Hi, I'm Shahid Hamid. With each passing year, the words of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. become more and more necessary to remember. With this in mind, the World Arts Foundation and KBOO Foundation members would like to invite you, your family, and friends to their 31st anniversary and tribute to the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Monday, January the 18th, broadcast live from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. from Highland Christian Center in Portland. As in years past, there will be a variety of local and regional choirs, performers, and entertainers, all paying homage to the work and legacy of Dr. King and our efforts to keep his dream alive. So remember, Monday, January the 18th at the Highland Christian Center, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., and of course, right here on KBOO FM radio.
The greatness of America is the right to protest far right.
What would you have instead?
No, this is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
And good morning, good morning, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You are listening to Positively Revolting this morning on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And this morning we are, in fact, talking about, well, what has been, what has passed away, what is still brewing and whirling around, what is coming into being, all of that kind of good stuff. Because, in fact, we've just crossed over one of them absolutely arbitrary transitional points.
The Roman New Year.
Exactly so. Go, Gregor. What Gregor has given us, we shall,
so shall it
celebrate.
Be. But we're, in other words, our sort of our year in review.
This is our year,
the year
in
of shows.
Show. Yes, indeed. So with that in mind, actually, Lynn, I'm going to go back on something I said moments ago. Could you turn my headphones up?
Sure.
Just a little. Good. Okay. There we go. Much better now. With that in mind, we're looking at the topics that really shaped last year. Some, you know, I wouldn't say our favorite topics, because I wouldn't say I like these topics. I would love to live in a world where we never had to discuss them again, but that's not the world we currently have. So Lynn and I thought it would be kind of fun to surprise each other and come up with our lists independentemente. Anyway, and we are...
Except we do plan the shows together, so there's bound to be some intersectionality.
And well, I gotta say, we did, in fact, do the shows together. I have a feeling that we have an idea of probably pretty similar of what shaped last year. But our secret ballots have not been revealed to each other just yet. We also want to encourage your calls to 503-231-8187 this morning, and you too can chime in and help us remember those currents and tell us what you thought actually was the most important stories, issues that had the most impact or long-ranging effect. Also, stories that I think sometimes we miss because they're actually things that were positive and to be celebrated, which sometimes don't catch our attention so easily. Dear listeners, call in with those. 503-231-8187. The number to call to join us on the air this morning here on Positively Revolting. Also want to encourage you to follow along on Facebook or the Twitterverse throughout the week, because once a week is not enough. On Twitter, you can find our fan page at,
Positive Revolt.
Wait, I take it back. On Twitter, you find us at Positive Revolt. On Facebook, you find our fan page, where you can find us as Positively Revolting. As ever.
As ever.
So, Liv, what do you say? What do you say about last year? I know what I said, and I'm already... I want to hear you.
Well, my one of my favorite shows we did was our interview with Marce Piercy, so that's a favorite. Though it was the scariest. I don't know if it was the best one we ever did.
It was the scariest show I've ever done in my life.
I know.
And it's only because we adore her.
I know. And she is not the easiest interview. No demon kind. She does not suffer fools remotely gladly, or does she like compliments particularly?
Oh, yes. It was a little like interviewing a super important, I felt a little like I was in my grad exams. Like I had to go talk
orals.
To, I had to go talk to the professor and justify my existence. It was a little like that.
Yeah.
But oh my God, it was Marce Piercy.
Yeah. And it was way fun. And the lovely David Naiman, who does many, many author interviews, said we seemed to have rapport while we were sweating and almost throwing up.
It was kind
the
of
other thing, people always say we need to do more shows on women. And I think we did five last year on the war on women. And I don't know if that was enough. What do you think?
There's always more to talk about. And that's the thing, really.
Those are the ones that we feel are important that we wish we never, ever had to do again. If we never had to do another show on the war on women, I'd be happy.
Right. And that's sort of, where it goes to me is last year sort of revolved around the dual themes of police violence and abuse of authority. And the repression of women, the curtailing of reproductive rights, the slut shaming, these things, those two issues really, to me, kind of took up the year, took up most of my headspace anyway. And
I would love to never actually talk about either of them again.
I would love to say we live in a world without police and without their violence, and that women are, in fact, holding up half the sky and respected as human beings with sovereign rights over our own bodies. I think that in 2016, I want to see us get there. I do. I want to see us actually achieve the Lotus Paradise. That's me.
In what year was that again?
Now.
2016. Okay.
Now. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Oh, the look you just... Oh, Lynn.
Oh, it's a look for radio, I tell you what. Well, you know, we also had... Bark, folks from Bark, which are the, who are they? The Mount Hood Watchdogs. They are, it's a nonprofit that spends a lot of time helping to keep the Forest Service honest, which is, talk about a big, thankless, huge job, though they all seem to be really happy doing it. We've had Amy Harwood, Courtney Ray, and the lovely Brenna Bell, who is their attorney. Courtney Harwood is their executive director, on a few times. Those were generally pretty upbeat shows because they have had some successes. They have had some things that have not gone the Timber Jazz Sale.
That is true. There was actually, we did report good news last year.
And also, I had folks on the day after the city council passed the resolution not to put any more fossil fuel infrastructure. Folks were feeling a little giddy that day because that was something that brought so many environmental groups together. And it's local. And we were, that made Portland the first city. Now, you know, Portland has a lot to answer for. But it made us, and I, and Charlie Hales is wibbly wobbly, to say the least. But that made us the first city to put the kibosh on any more fossil fuel infrastructure, unless they decide to renege on it. But, you know, so far, that's something to me that was, it was a fun show because that was not reported in the media. Folks that were on the show that morning talked about how they tried to find it, even someone... the local stations were not in there reporting on that. KABU was, as we often are, the source. Later on, as I often happens, I hear of things later on that we at KBOO have reported on in the moment, I tell you. Right there in the moment. So Donald Trump gets so much screaming, yelling, his sound bites, his, you know, inability to make an entire sentence, which seems to be extremely appealing. But we had David K. Johnston on once this year, who has covered the man on and off. He said for like 20 some years, and I said, how did you do it? And he goes, well, I didn't do it all the time. I did it on and off. If you would like, all these episodes, by the way, are on our page, on our archived on the KBOO webpage.
You can find it at kboo.fm/positivelyrevolting. Mm-hmm. And that'll take you to our page on the KBOO website where you can in fact find.
Or you can just find them.
Audio from many, 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 many of these shows, or at least a few.
No, I think they're all on there.
Most.
And many shows that I'd like to thank. Lisa Loving was our other Positively Revolting sister this year, who filled in for us on many an occasion. She's got some great shows up there as well, and I want to thank her once again. She is now our PM News and Public Affairs Director, so we're probably not going to get her to fill in for us much anymore. But there's another, and Linda Olson Osterlund filled in for us some last year too, and I want to thank them both very much for that.
That's nice. I would have to agree. Strangely, those were topics.
And you know, Linda Tornado.
Yeah, that's actually the one I was going to throw in there that you didn't yet, and that is Linda Tornado. Awesome. She wrote the book Living in Bootstrap America, and is just an amazing writer when it comes to class and actually telling it like it is when you are struggling to make ends meet paycheck to paycheck, and as was her entire life until this book really took off. And now she is, in fact, living as an author and not a waitress. And
But she has not forgotten her past. And
she has not.
It's another great show to check out because she's not afraid to talk.
And
she's not shy.
And she runs a great Twitter feed.
Yes, she does.
All right.
What's the name for Twitter?
Killer Martini.
Killer Martini. Right.
Yes, I would recommend.
I knew there were martinis in there. I couldn't remember if there was a number.
Let's go ahead and talk to George, because George has been waiting patiently. And let's go ahead and talk to George now. 503-231-8187, the number to call, and join us. Join us as we look at 2015. What the hell just happened? 2016, what's coming at us? That's where we're at this morning. Good morning, George.
Good morning. And the themes you have been stressing, the well-being of women in this country and I'm sure abroad, have been on my mind recently as I've been reading a bit about foreign policy. And something dawned on me about the what we call the war, the former war maybe, in Iraq. And just to be brief, I thought about the history of this in terms of the terrible toll of life taken on infants and children and young mothers and the elderly in Iraq since 1990 when the sanctions were applied. And I kept hearing conventional media or seeing conventional media talk about the war in Afghanistan being the longest war in U.S. history. And I thought, well, they're thinking about Iraq's war or former war is starting in 2003 with an invasion, but they don't realize or they don't want to talk about the fact that although there was, after 1991, when the invasion occurred in January, I believe, within 3 months there was an agreement which apparently was meant to show most of us that the war had ended, but the sanctions on Iraq, which deprived Iraq of necessary food and medical supplies, pharmaceuticals, machinery to do all kinds of things, and helped cripple every aspect of their society and created a horrifying increase in mortality, in diseases, malnutrition, continued even past 1998. I don't know when the sanctions ended. Do you guys know?
That's a darn fine question.
I don't know when the sanctions ended. I'll be trying to find that out momentarily.
Well, I just wondered, because I wondered, I was thinking about it, and I thought, you know, with those sanctions causing so many infants and children to die to the point where a book published in 1998 looked at the deaths in Iraq, and the dedication was to the 1 million children of Iraq who have perished.
Right. And you'll recall, you know, when confronted about that, Madeleine Albright, you know, saying that she thought 1 million dead Iraqi children were worth it.
Right, and the author also said, you know, not only to the 1 million children of Iraq who have died, it said, killed by U.S. biological warfare through the 1990s and to the hundreds of thousands more that will join them in the months and years ahead. And so I began to look into this a little bit, and it seemed that the Iraq War, really, that started in 1991, if you include the sanctions as a war policy, which it certainly looks like, continued right up until, well, I don't know, maybe you could even say until today when...
Well, I mean, some sanctions do still exist, but I think in a quick looking online, looks like many sanctions ended the most... powerful of the sanctions ended until about 2003.
Mm-hmm. And who needs sanctions when you've got the effects of depleted uranium?
Right. I was going to say, and of course, other sanctions have come and gone in the intervening years.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And so, to me, to just bring it to my conclusion here, it seemed that the Iraq people and their country, the infrastructure, every aspect of it has been hammered consistently, and the people themselves have been driven farther and farther into a higher mortality, worse health, deeper malnutrition. The depleted uranium is one of the key elements, and there are documents out there from the Defense Department and also the United Kingdom's Defense Department which admit that it's a very dangerous and hazardous material to use, and yet the U.S. military denies that there is any threat. So all of this has meant an increasing mortality for women, and especially for infants and children and the elderly. And I just wanted to say thank you so much, because this is part of what we need to look at, which is the unity of what is happening to women and children in our country today with what we have done by our, well, mass murder, criminal foreign policy, not only in Iraq, but in Central America, in Vietnam for years.
Drones in Pakistan.
Yes. It is all over the place. And I sure want to thank you for mentioning the depleted uranium. And thank you, folks, for providing the public a chance and to interact with us on these on this fundamental issue of human, well, rights and dignity and happiness. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You take care. And the time is about 20 after 8 o'clock in the morning. You are listening to KBOO, your very own community radio station. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we are checking out what has happened, what is coming. This is the first show of Positively Revolting in the new year in 2016. And we're glad that you're joining us this morning. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think were the most important stories or topics, themes of 2015? And what do you think we need to really focus on coming up in this year ahead? Again, my time pretty much was pretty focused on the war on women and the virulent upswing of, hatred. In this country that was so, I mean, it's, you know, people have prejudices, people have bigotries. We live in a system of white supremacy in this country. And last year, we just saw things bubbling over and frothing up. I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that we are in a, we are coming up to a presidential election, and that a lot of hyperbole, a lot of hatred is getting stirred up, trying to mobilize a populace, mobilize voters in what has to be just, you know, I'm having a hard time not swearing this morning.
Well, you just keep at it,
in,
though.
And what has to be just about.
You've got the button. If you have to.
If I have to beep myself. What has to be just an amazing bad show of trying to stir up, again, getting people agitated through hate. It's not the best way to motivate people. It really isn't. It has far-reaching...
Oh, it's extremely effective.
But it has far-reaching repercussions that you eventually can't control, right? And, or maybe that's what you're looking for. I don't, you know, well, who am I to say?
I didn't say it was good, but it's certainly effective.
Yeah, sure. No, it is effective, and that's, I believe, why we're seeing it. But really, when it comes to people of color, racism, when it comes to transphobia, hatred of Muslims, hatred of queers, hatred, again, just kind of across the board of if you ain't in the status quo, you ain't right. That is, I think, probably my major theme of 2015, that incredible lack of tolerance and the stirring up of hatred.
We were really fortunate to have folks from Black Lives Matters on many times, Teresa Rayford in particular, Teresa Rayford, who is nominated. I don't know how she will like this, and I wish Teresa, if you're listening, give us
Teresa.
A call. Teresa, excuse me. Early morning mouth. Woman of the Year 2015 from who is the organization that is doing this? They're calling her the leader of Black Lives Matter, and I think she would completely argue about that.
But meanwhile,
she is a powerful and influential voice during the mayoral campaigns and has done a lot for Black Lives Matter. And I'm trying to, sorry, I just had this thing up. It's Women of the Year 2015. I would go from Go Local PDX has said that, and I'll go for it. I'd love to see her on Time Magazine as that. But
yeah, that would be good.
Yeah. But we've had her on the show a number of times. That's always great. She is a wonderful speaker, a clear thinker, and not afraid to say what's on her mind.
And, well, let's go ahead and take another...
caller.
Let's go ahead and take another caller. New caller, same name. Good morning, George.
Yes, good morning to you gals. The reason I'm calling is the biggest phenomena of this past year to me, I would call the Trump phenomena, the rise of the party of hate and bigotry. Not only does it represent potential damage should he become elected, but it represents a great damage he's already done to the American way, and so many people have been influenced by his thinking, and I think it's a real tragedy for the country.
Well, you know, one of the things about that I find interesting is, like, I think the most important thing is to find out why he's so appealing and look at those things, because he himself is just an image. Michael Mead likened him to Prometheus's brother that we've never heard about.
Well, he surely appeals
because he
to
is
nature.
Yeah. Well, some people's, and why is that so appealing? What makes a man who can't complete a sentence? And I don't know if he read Goering's book or he's the ultimate in propaganda, because he just hammers home, they can't do it, they're going to try. Those are the sort of things that he says.
That's very effective in propaganda is fear. Fear truly motivates people and is a great trigger, and he is squeezing that trigger with reckless abandon.
Yeah, you know, I heard Dee Snider of Twisted Sister interviewed, and apparently they were good friends, and he said... And the guy said, so he's using your song, the interviewer, we're not going to take it. And he goes, I was okay at first, but he goes, the Donald Trump I knew was a Democrat. He goes, he's nothing like this guy. However, Donald is a casebook narcissist, and whatever gets him the most attention is what he will. But he is completely not genuine.
Well, I trust and hope that he'll slip off the stage. Anyway, that's my comments, and thanks for letting me get a little bit off my chest.
Well, you're welcome, Drew. Thanks for listening.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And,
And George, go to our website and listen to the show with David K. Johnston about Donald Trump. It was pretty good. You might learn some things there, and it's... this is our historical show. It is wrapping up 2015 because a lot happened last year.
Indeed. And I think, you know, George, again, I am in full agreement there.
Oh.
That I think that really a lot of, well, okay, so listeners to the show know that probably that Teresa Mitchell, host of Press Watch, an occasional guest host here on Positively Revolting, is my partner. And she's also just a totally, totally kicking trans woman, and has a public job where she has to, in fact, deal with large swaths of the public on a daily basis.
Large swaths.
and I have to say, over the years, we have talked about it many times, that she can tell by the public's reaction to her what is being kicked around in the media, what is being pushed hard on faux news, and this year what is being pushed hard out of the mouths of the campaigners, because the level of harassment she gets is directly tied to the level of vehemence and bigotry being pushed out of the mega churches and out of faux news. Seems like kind of a our barometer, basic barometer, but there it is. And so, you know, every time those statements get made in the media, every time those, last year, you'll recall, there was a lot of talk about gender-neutral bathrooms and the need for trans recognition. And then there was always pushback. Every time there was, some movement forward, there was a whole lot of pushback and a whole lot of transphobia and completely specious fears about what's going to happen, you know, when that guy is waiting in the women's room to get you, because now we have a gender neutral bathroom. All of this stuff directly impacts the lives of trans people when that kind of hatred and misinformation and bigotry gets out there. And so we saw a lot of that in 2015, and I would love to continue to see a push for trans spaces and trans visibility in 2016, and a whole lot more understanding. I want to see, really, what can we do this year? What can we do now to counter that that hatred, that vilification, that bigotry that we have seen and that we are going to continue to see from those places, right? From the radical right, from the elections, both local and national, because as you said, hate is a great motivator. And so we're going to watch politicians really push that, because we have every other election year, right? So we might as well be prepared. We know that that's going to happen. How do we respond as caring and compassionate community members to try to cut through that hate and to try to increase tolerance, understanding, and, you know, love?
What so?
How do we do that?
There's an Elvis Costello song in there. How do we do that? Listeners, any suggestions? Everybody wants to hear them, I think. Anyway, let's go now to Phil, who is calling us this morning at 8:30?
Good morning.
In the AM.
Good morning, ladies. Wonderful show, and all the morning programs do an excellent job highlighting what I think 2015 was, a year of laying bare hypocrisies in the criminal injustice system, how young African-American, trans people, mentally ill people, and homeless people can easily get shot by police, why other segments of our population can go openly flaunt weapons laws and actually take over federal buildings, as you see.
And just ask for snacks.
Yeah. And then Donald Trump is really just the tip of a spear in what Chris Hedges has been highlighting as the new Christian nationalist, and also this new atheist, greed is good, everything, as long as I get my wealth, kind of sect of population. So it's important to realize that Donald Trump's just, you know, the point of a spear of a larger group. And a lot of these folks coming in, taking over that refuge, are also from that same group of people who think that federal land should be used to be exploited by private citizens and corporations like the Koch brothers. But the most important thing as we go into 2016 is to remember to start to connect and relating to people, and how we're all more similar than we are different. And that we should go for a bold statement and get Bernie Sanders in office and kick out the money makers and the scam artists.
And that doesn't sound like a bad idea.
Yeah, and I was also going to say hypocrisy in the military-industrial complex, as we see our spreading war across Central Asia, as we support Saudi Arabia with $50 billion in weapon sales, as we let Iran and Libya and Syria twist in the wind. So, you ladies keep doing the good work, and the only solutions I have we'd probably find in the past from folks like Emma Goldman or Utah Phillips, and that there's a lot of good things going on out there, and it's just not going to be in the news because the news is all corporate-owned media. And so,
except for us.
Yeah, exactly. Go for your public radio community stations. Go for KVU and X-Ray, and kick National Petroleum Radio out the door, because most of the time you listen to those folks, and it's amazing how they obfuscate the truth and softball what's really issues that are going on. But you ladies keep doing the great work, and the world's getting better.
Hey, you take care.
Thanks, Phil.
And 503-231-8187, the number to call this morning. And let's go ahead and talk to John. Good morning, John.
Hi, good morning, honey. How are you this morning?
I'm doing okay. How are you, John?
I'm not too bad. I wanted to offer a smidgen of insight into the appeal of Donald Trump. I would not support him or vote for him, but I've been truly enjoying watching the bull in the china shop. Jesse Ventura actually talks about this, and it's an interesting thing. I'm one of those people that I could be pushed towards the far right simply by my own personal experience, disenfranchisement, loss of economic power, the threat of poverty.
Wait a minute. How does that push you? How would that? I'm always fascinated by that. How would that push you to the right? Where do you think you would get benefits?
That is the fertile ground from which they recruit.
I know.
Yeah, good question.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I interrupted you there.
No. This is an important discussion to actually have.
Yeah.
I'm in kind of an odd situation. I'm a KBOO supporter and have been for a long, long time. When I've attempted to go through the channels to face the difficulties that I've gone through in my own life, I've attempted to use what is considered the governmental agencies and stuff to find support and to be able to succeed both as a father and as somebody who's on the bottom of the economic ladder. There's no easy way to say it. I've had my face rubbed in a lot of bigotry and corruption and towards me. And I've been through the family law system, and as a male, I've had, it can only just simply be described as outright bias against me as a male. That doesn't seem to, there's a lot of people, like if I were to simply just say that, just as I've said it, I would then just instantaneously get thrown back in my face that I must be a misogynist.
Right.
And I'm not talking about hating women. The fact of the matter is that the most important people in my life are from the time I was a child to my adulthood, literally they've been women. So it's a really difficult position to be put in. And I think that for the family law system in this country is just simply insane.
Right. No, I'm going to go ahead and point out that it's part of the whole injustice system, in general.
And we agree with, I agree with that. Absolutely. But how do you think the right wing has a solution for that for you? How do you think you are going to get more justice if you were part of the...
I don't.
Oh, okay. That's all I wanted to know, Phil.
No. I mean, it was a hypothetical thing, he said.
Let me finish.
Sorry, John. Go right ahead.
Go ahead, John. Sorry.
Okay. I don't think that they're actually offering a solution, but I think that what happens is that if you go through a substantial amount of irrationality, bias, and injustice directed towards you over and over and over again, that there's a tendency for people to want to kind of put their head down and to find something to latch on to.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, I mean, one of the things that I've done to help me through my own personal struggles is I've gone back repeatedly and listened to Martin Luther King, listened to Malcolm X, and it has been the minority experience of enduring oppression. I've also, read some of like the earlier feminist theorists, and it's kind of odd because of my situation that I would access that as a valid point of understanding my experience. So I'm an odd bird in that rather than just kind of close down under stress, what I do is open up and take in more information rather than less. Most people will shut down and kind of put on their armor. And I think that that's the appeal of Trump, is he just says, this is bad, we're going to do it. He's not even coherent. Right?
I know. Stating that this morning. You are correct.
Yes.
Thank you for using sentences.
Yes. The thing with Trump, I confess I enjoy watching, Bush the Third, it would be, on the stage with Trump, and I'm just going, well, there goes the oligarchy. I enjoy the fact
Bush the Third is completely flummoxed that this should possibly be happening to him. And that part is sort of funny. He can't believe it.
Yes, he can't believe it. So I there's a kernel for you, is that I myself live absolutely on the economic knife's edge. You could talk to me 6 months from now and I could be homeless and it would not be due to anything that I had any control over.
Right. No, I hear you.
So I'm in that position. So when you were talking about Bush being flummoxed and we're talking about Trump, what I do is I know that Trump is rich, but I identify Bush with the oligarchy. And I identify him with the oligarchy that has, you know, ever since the Reagan administration, there's been the downward spiral, so that people like me who've been basically attempted to behave with integrity and honesty and find myself, you know, nearing, I'm getting old, I'm going to be 57, and I look at my old age, and at the best, what I can hope for is an old age of poverty. And you know, and it's really a roll of the dice that I, you know, just don't simply wind up homeless.
I hear you.
And so when I look at Trump and I look at Bush and I look at the other establishment characters, I look at the establishment characters and I look at them as the people that drove the ship into the iceberg, and they're still wanting to drive the ship further into the iceberg. So while Trump is an absolute narcissist,
well, it's not their iceberg.
He's
they're fine.
But when I see that, it's kind of like this, you know, like a dog fight where you're used to watching the certain dogs fight, and they just stick a crazy dog in the ring, and you hate the dogs that have been in the ring previously and are still in the ring, and you go, wow, look at that crazy dog just absolutely chew them to pieces. So,
well, John, you put some thought into this.
John's a thoughtful person.
Yeah, and thank you.
And I also just want to comment on part of the conversation around feminism and around family court systems. If you go to the root, right, the family court system is built on the patriarchy. And the reason why it's bad. It's super bad. I don't want to say really anything good about it, because it's really kind of bad. It messes up families, it messes up kids, it messes up people. It's founded on patriarchy. It's founded on the idea that mothers have a special bond with their kids that fathers don't have, that there is essential biological differences when it comes to who is a better parent. And I've just seen this over and over again in my life. And it's absolutely tied to gender role stereotyping. I guess that's where I'm going with that. And well, so the fact that
I love Ani, and I've actually spoken with you personally about it. Yeah. I so appreciate Teresa, because Teresa has been able to express a point of view that and quite eloquently. I mean, I remember years ago standing out in my garden with my hoe listening to Kabu, and I had Teresa explain her own personal circumstances, and I just was I felt utterly flummoxed at that moment, but in a way that was really, really good for my own personal growth, because she opened my head up and said, here I am, I'm a human being, and I do not fit into the boxes mm-hmm. to which you have been taught to ascribe humanness. So, and this is directly connected to me for what you were just mentioning, mm-hmm. because when both of my children's life, I was the nurturant, bonding parent. Mm-hmm. And that was really difficult to get established. But it's the thing that I fundamentally know to be true is that the reason that both of my children are emotionally intact, and people will comment constantly on that my boys are both respectful, cooperative, and happy, is at the point at which they were developmentally vulnerable, neither of their mothers were actually able to provide them with a nurturance. I consciously was aware of the fact that if you really want to change the world, that's the place and the time to do it. And that's the most, and I actually say to mothers that I see, you know, I work in a service job, and mothers will come in with their babies nestled upon their breasts, their little swings. I tell the mothers, I say, you are doing the most important job in the world. And I believe that.
It's true.
And I myself did that job.
Well, right. Thank you, John. Thank you very much. And we're going to go and let some other callers on now. But thank you so much for being a thoughtful person and a great nurturer. And thank you for calling in and your comments this morning.
And it is, just about 9:15. We are running out of show. But let's go ahead and give that phone number out, 503-231-8187. This is Positively Revolting. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO. in Portland. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And you can also, throughout the week, follow along in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt. You can also find us on Facebook, Positively
We're
Revolting.
All over the place.
You can email us, positivelyrevolting at gmail.com. And as Lynn pointed out, you can find all of our archived programs on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/positivelyrevolting.
There's some interesting stuff there, I tell you what.
There are.
And should we...
I wanted to let people know, coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 o'clock, Democracy in Motion hosts Lisa Loving speaks with Troutdale City Councilor Larry Morgan about the city's new coordinated campaign against sexual trafficking and other issues that the city is facing. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. 10:15, you'll hear Flashpoints. Today on Flashpoints, they're taking a close look at Hillary Clinton's role in the aftermath of the military coup in Honduras. Also, North and South Korea, the pivot, and the bomb. At 11 o'clock, you'll listen to The Digital Divide with host Rabia Yemen, who will be interviewing Dr. William A. Richards about the clinical trials with psilocybin at Johns Hopkins University and his book, Sacred Knowledge, Psychedelics, and Religious Experiences. Thank you for listening to KBOO as always, and thanks, KBOO members, for your life-giving continuing support. Thanks. If you are not yet a KBOO member, you can take care of that right now by going to the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Okay. So, Conch.
Good morning.
Hi, honey. What's up?
Well, you know, in true KBOO fashion, there's been a few times when you have managed to break some news or bring some topics to light that it's taken, you know, weeks or months for the rest of the media to discover them breathlessly. You know, Time Magazine discovered Gamergate sometime after you guys did a show on that when, you know, women were first being... threatened and harassed and all that by you know, guys who thought that this realm of society, of realm of culture, was exclusively theirs for a while. And it was, you know, a small number of guys, but it's kind of like what John just said. There are areas where guys are starting to lose the huge privilege that they had. At one point, you've got a minority of men are college students now. You've got incomes going down across the board, but they're starting to go down for the average man at this point. And there are certainly people out there who are saying, hey, don't look at the few hundred families, mostly headed by men, who are sucking the pensions upward and sucking the income upward, and, you know, and taking all those small family-owned businesses and sucking the marrow out of those. But instead, you know, look at the women and minorities and immigrants who are in your neighborhood, and scapegoat them instead. And you know, this is one of the great things that happens when, you know, progress is actually made, is that you have these groups that are all too happy to exploit the situation. The Meninists are one. You know, the men's rights movement. They'll come up with the folks who are good dads and are having trouble in family court, in an adversarial system that is meant to make things hard for you, and they will say, you've got a friend in us. Just, you know, join with us, join with our billionaire-backed buddies, and everything will go, you know, flow back to the men again, as if that will happen.
Well, thank you for that comment, and for liking our show.
As if he had choice. Okay. No,
anyway,
thanks very much. And thanks for bringing up those points.
And waking up this early to do that. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Have a good year.
Oh, yes.
Why, thanks.
And you. My good man. So, you know, 2015 left me with a couple of questions to ponder. I was really trying to come up with my top 10 questions left from 2015, because 10, you know, it's a good round number. It's a deca something.
It's a Dewey decimal number, which we don't use much anymore. Yeah, it's a decimal thing. Yeah, okay.
It's, It's not a Dewey. Dewey Decimal is a librarian.
I know, but it's from
okay,
10.
So, all that aside, we've had coffee. I didn't come up with 10 questions, but I did come up with three. Three very heartfelt questions. Things I still search for an answer. 2015 left me with questions like, just what is a mass shooting? According to how they're defined, we were having them, daily, at least a couple times a week there for a while, and certainly quite a few, however they're defined, for the year. But I'm curious because there is so much discrepancy between between what is called a mass shooting and what is called, I'll say, domestic violence. There was definitely articles around the idea or articles that cited that they specifically left out shootings where three or more people died if they were related or if they knew each other, because that was different than a mass shooting, which apparently is random stranger danger. But if you include, you know, people killing three or more people they know, then that actually it more than doubles the number of shootings, because apparently we like to kill each other. Apparently that's that was trending in 2015.
Trending.
Ooh. Killing each other. It was one of those things that kind of blew me away.
Yeah, I could see the top of your head go off.
Well, when I saw the definition starkly laid out in one of the articles that, you know, defined how they came to the number of mass shootings, and they said, you know, we are not counting acts of domestic violence. And I thought, why not? It's only a mass shooting if people don't know each other first. If people know each other first, well, then these things happen within families. It's tragic. It's what is that about? So that's my first question left over from last year. My second question left over from last year is, do white Christian men ever get to become terrorists?
Oh, just that's wondering. No. That's no. So far, no.
Like, what exactly would they need to do to get that qualification? I just wanted to know. Because apparently, talking about selling baby parts and shooting people inside an abortion-providing clinic does not mean you're a terrorist. It means you're disturbed.
You're just unhappy.
And I would have to agree that the man seemed very disturbed and rather unhappy. I would still say that he's actually trying to use fear and intimidation to change a political point. That's the definition of terrorism when you look it up in a dictionary. And I just want to know, again, what white Christian men have to do to actually qualify for the label of terrorist in this country.
I don't know if I want to know the answer to that.
I'm curious. I got the third question.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Question three. I only got three.
All right, go on.
Last one. All right. Again, with 1,200 people killed by the police in this country in 2015, that's right, 1,200 people killed in 2015 by the police, I want to know, at what point do we actually request international assistance and international intervention from, say, one of the international human rights groups to stop state-sponsored murder of U.S. citizens? That's what I want to know. Okay, those are my three questions from 2015. Over to you.
I just had a couple. One of my, a person that I admire very much went to another realm this year. His name was John Trudell, Native Indian activist, all around talented and really funny guy too. I was really watching his Facebook page as he was about to transition. And he said there were two things that, because I was listening to a lot of his stuff that he said this year that just made so much sense to me, because there is all the violence, but there's the stuff that's going on with the planet as far as what a place we are in with where we live. And one of the things he said is that, you know, it's not about freedom. Life is not about freedom. It's about responsibility. I like that. The other thing he was talking about, and this is his problem with Christianity and many other sky-based religions is the thought of putting the Creator as a human is where we get into a lot of trouble, because instead of just being, we are the human beings. We are more than human beings because we are in godlike form. Well, especially if you're a white male, you're in godlike form. But
well, that's because you've created God in your image.
Yeah. But in biblical terms, it says God created us in, quote,
details,
his image. And that was the huge problem. He said he could never imagine the Creator or the creative force. It's a mystery. It's not it's not something of human form or of of human form at all. And that's the problem. That's when nature started to be something for us to control. And that, as you all know, if you don't, you need to check it out, has been getting us into a lot of trouble.
It has.
Uh-huh.
It has.
Those were two things that, and I miss John Trudell, but everything he said is still out there and worth listening to.
It's true. We are, oh gosh, so close to out of show. Don't really have time to squeeze in anyone else. So allow me to just say, coming up ahead, 2016.
Wee-haw! I feel like Slim Pickens riding the atomic bomb sometimes. Out of Dr. Strangelove.
It's a little like that. I personally, I'm going to be focusing on how to increase and encourage compassion. Not so much headlines, because I think that often we distract ourselves with headlines. Because
they are meant to be distracting. Yes.
They're sort of the flash in the pan. This very moment, not really connected to anything else. But see what, see where we can increase and encourage compassion and compassionate response, and have that be sort of my litmus test as to action. That's my 2016.
I have no resolution. I don't. I'm. It's still very young.
I haven't really thought of it as a resolution. I suppose it kind of is.
Yeah.
I was thinking of that as sort of how to approach the political scene.
Oh.
As it were.
Yeah.
With
and with rationality.
One may try.
It's a thought.
You know. And again, just to encourage you to follow along, and you can find Lynn and I on Facebook. You can find our fan page, Positively Revolting. You can follow along in the Twitterverse, Positive Revolt. You can email us at gmail.com, positivelyrevolting@gmail.com, or here on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/positivelyrevolting. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Lisa Loving's Democracy in Motion, speaking with Troutdale City Councilor Larry Morgan. Our engineering pixie says now the mayor.
And thank you, Ross Freeman Levin, for being our top-notch engineer this morning. Thanks for coming in so early in the morning.
Yay, engineering pixies. They rock. And with that, Lynn and I will be back next week.
Positively revolting as ever.
What would you have instead?
No, this is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Fight, break our legs, and we say thank you, and the trying to evolve at Religion for Life.
And now, we as humans find ourselves as agents of evolution. It's no longer natural selection, it's now actual selection.
This week I speak with Steve McIntosh, the author of The Presence of the Infinite, the spiritual experience of beauty, truth, and goodness. Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife. She's dying to evolve.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the We Real Cool film series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month is Nacho Drum, showing Thursday, January 21st at 7 p.m. Released in 1993, Nacho Drum is a French documentary about the Romani people's journey from Northwest India to Spain, consisting primarily of music. Again, that's Nacho Drum, Thursday, January 21st, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events. This is KBOO Portland. It's 9 a.m. Coming up on Democracy in Motion, host Lisa Loving speaks with Troutdale City Councilor Larry Morgan about the city's new coordinated campaign against sexual trafficking and other issues the city is facing. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, followed at 10:15 with By Flashpoints. And at 11 on the Digital Divide, host Rabia Yeaman interviews Dr. William A. Richards about his clinical trials with psilocybin at Johns Hopkins University and his book Sacred Knowledge, Psychedelics and Religious Experiences. Thank you for listening to KBOO. And thanks, KBOO members, for your continuing support. If you have not yet become a member of the KBOO Foundation, you may correct that oversight at kboo.fm. Just click where it says Donate Today.